It is another episode of As the Steelers World Turns. Well, that's not actually the title of the show, but I almost feel like that kind of maybe is what it should be, or even the show of many of my colleagues, because when you're in the midst of a Pittsburgh Steelers season, you have drama as well as tons of action, good or bad. This is actually another episode of Mic Drop, here presented by the Believe Network. I'm Mike Osti, as always, and I will be joined for this program here by Neil Coulong, who is a colleague of mine here amongst media and the managing editor of NFL Wire, as we're going to touch on some recent drama that's been reported surrounding the Pittsburgh Steelers and maybe a decision that was recently made, a decision that has been made about what's going on forward, all about the quarterback situation, of course, and a weird quarterback controversy the Steelers somehow find themselves in this year. And then even some spreads, some different things that have moved in terms of Super Bowl odds, AFC odds, off of just one good game, despite a team that has still lost much more than they've won this season, and what's going on with their game ahead against the Dolphins. They're on the road, but they are 7-point underdogs to Miami. Usually Vegas is on the money, but some Steelers fans seemingly take exception with that spread right now, especially after beating Tampa Bay. So, Neil, first off, thanks for joining me here. It's been a while since we've done one of these. So how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, to jump this off, we heard the report from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that Mitch Trubisky, who started the season as the Steelers' week one start, I don't think that was a surprise to anybody. Tom was going to cling to the veteran at that time over rookie Kenny Pickett, and he was struggling. But the decision was made to pull the plug on Mitch Trubisky and bench him, not necessarily because he was struggling and the team was struggling on offense, but because of an altercation, a locker room altercation that's been reported with Diontae Johnson. I don't know if this was factually the case. I wasn't there, but based on the reports, it doesn't really give a good vibe, but it also seems a weird decision to cling to, that's why you'd make that decision. Basically, from what you know and what you've heard, what do you make of that report in terms of, do you believe the validity there? Do you believe that's really why Tomlin made that decision? And if that was why he made the decision and it wasn't about the level of play, what does that make you think about anything going on with the Steelers, even connecting the dots to Diontae Johnson, who wasn't really painted with the greatest brush strokes in that report, but yet didn't get blamed at all, and they just kept on moving along with their wide receiver?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with that, Mike. Yeah. To me, in all honesty, the root of this is truly a fair but perhaps intentionally misleading headline. I wasn't there either. I don't doubt a report corroborated by multiple sources, according to Jerry Dulac.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that there was some type of encounter. It's not uncommon. It happens. I'm sure a frustrating game for all parties involved. Diontae Johnson is a highly paid wide receiver. He's used to getting the ball. He wasn't getting the ball, perhaps to the volume that he wanted to, or perhaps not in the situations that he wanted, whatever. I mean, we don't need to get into whether that's a valid complaint or not. It just seems reasonable that he would have done that. Mitch Trubisky, a captain of the team and a quarterback who is no doubt used to that sort of thing, because that happens a lot, especially at that level, firing back at him. None of that seems unusual to me, maybe not even noteworthy, but the fact that Trubisky was benched after that, not because of that, the report does not say that. It is providing the benching as the timing of it, then with the benching as kind of a, here's the timeline. This is the order in which, the sequence in which it happened.
Yeah, people kind of were able to run amok from that, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think that people are taking it to that level because the report it doesn't dispel that. It's almost like, we're going to put it here because this is, contextually, this is fair to say,
right?
But it's not exactly why it happened. I would be absolutely shocked if a quarterback got benched because he had an argument with a wide receiver in the middle of a game.
Right. It seems insane.
That's not at all the direction that would usually go in. Right. So let's just say that, we can go with what Mike Tomlin said at his press conference on Tuesday. We can say competitors get into it, and I'm paraphrasing him, something to the effect of, if it happened, and I'm not saying that it did, but look, they're competitors, that's the kind of fire that comes out of that. If it didn't happen, maybe it should have. I think that's great. That's an excellent way to put it. He's not confirming it, but he kind of is confirming it. And he's saying, I don't have a problem with this. And that, I think, underscores the idea that Trubisky was benched because of this. Then you get into the idea that Trubisky's play, which in my opinion, wasn't good. I don't think Trubisky had great play for much of the 3.5 games that he played.
Yeah, right.
I didn't expect necessarily him to be benched at halftime, but, and we've discussed this at various points on social media, Mike Tomlin, though he had Ben Roethlisberger for his entire career, there were times where Ben Roethlisberger was not well enough to play and didn't. There was a long stretch of time in 2019 they had to use backup quarterbacks. Both of those backup quarterbacks got the hook at halftime at various points due to ineffective play. So we've never viewed Mike Tomlin as needing to make a decision on a quarterback. But the reality is, I punched these numbers up, I think, before the season, but it was like within his last 54 games, the starting quarterback who began the starter at the beginning of the game when Mike Tomlin coached didn't finish it like 6 times. And I promise you that rate is pretty substantially high in comparison to his peers. So he has a quick hook.
And imagine if he didn't have a Hall of Famer in his prime. So obviously a lot of recently he's had Ben, who's been hurt, who's been older, and then he had Mason and Duck, but, and now Mitch and Kenny. But imagine if in the middle of Tomlin's prime with the Steelers and Ben's prime, he didn't have Ben and he had the situation now, he maybe would have been hooking them left and right, even more so.
And his career might have been, you know, 75% shorter than it is now. Right. All these things play together. It's not, we get into too much of, let's line this up vertically. Let's say that this is number one, this is number two. All these variables come together. And the end result is really what you're looking at. And Mitch Trubisky's play was not at a very high level prior to his game against Tampa Bay, which I'm sure we'll get into. Before that, it's not surprising that he was benched. Tomlin's history suggests he's not going to deal with it if it's not there. He had ample opportunity to do something, and he really didn't. What Tomlin said was, we want a spark. And they went and got Pickett, and maybe he kind of sparked the team a little bit and then sort of, you know, waned off from that, whatever it was. It's not a good offensive team top to bottom, and it's not one specific thing. But I don't think Trubisky earned the opportunity to continue at doing what he was doing.
Right. And Mr. Trubisky did have the edge going into the season, maybe in the offseason for Tomlin, from what I've heard as well. And kind of everyone thought, based on being a veteran, based on having done it before. But that goes out the window when you have several games of body of work into the season. You're not playing well and the team's struggling. And yeah, maybe they did need that spark. I think maybe the surprise for some was that, thinking maybe not digging into the numbers that you just offered there, thinking that maybe he would wait till the bye or wait a little bit longer with the veteran because of the decision that now exists that we'll get into a moment of the entire principle that's been going on in the NFL for years, that once you do throw in your rookie, who is your franchise guy, especially if he's a first-round pick, you're usually sinking or swimming with him. And now there are people debating if you are now hooking Kenny Pickett and putting Mitch back in because of one half of solid football. Neil Coulong here joining me on Mic Drop on the Believe Network. He is the managing editor with NFL Wire, which includes Steelers Wire, that does cover the Pittsburgh Steelers there for the USA Today properties. Now, before I want to get to Kit Pickett and that Trubisky and that whole decision that now connects to there, because the timing of this was just really funky and I'm sure annoying to the Steelers. As you know, they do get annoyed when things get out there. And the way Tomlin answered is a typical Mike Tomlin coach speak answer that we've dealt with for years and all the fans have dealt with for almost 2 decades now, of basically confirming without actually giving you the literal verbiage to be able to use and say he confirmed. But it was perfect that he did that. Thoughts though on the under the radar part of this, and it's not to say this is unique at all, because as you detailed, it's innate to the position. Wide receiver is the one position in all of sports, really, that no matter how good you are, if somebody else is not good, it will hamper your production, your money, and make you be viewed as worse. Just look at two of the three best receivers of all time, Randy Moss and T.O. They weren't blessed with exactly what Jerry Rice was blessed with. At times, maybe they had solid play. Of course, Randy Moss had Brady there briefly, but they had many years where they were annoyed with quarterback play. Some got out, some was within. And that's just a thing of receivers, and that maybe innately makes them divas. So you see that with Diontae Johnson there. He explodes a little bit. He no longer has a future Hall of Fame quarterback. He now has this mess that he's dealing with, and maybe he let it get to him. Is that something that is a big deal? Is a little deal? Is it something or is it nothing for you? Because it's innate to the position, but the difference of Diontae Johnson doing it and, say, Antonio Brown doing it, AB was the best receiver in football, Hall of Famer in that trajectory before really getting wild. Diontae Johnson got some money, not maybe as much as maybe he would have wanted, and there were a lot of people still not even sold on him at wide receiver one. So if he's jawing at a veteran quarterback, even if it's Trubisky, who's not obviously securing him being dominant for the franchise, maybe that's a bit too much for him. And there are some people that have put out there that, good, Mitch, you stood up to a guy that has as many Pro Bowl appearances as you.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that in that context, but yeah, they each have one.
Right.
It wouldn't have been there if other guys didn't back out.
Yeah, it was. It's a weird interaction between. They're not that much different in age. They both have one. They both have a lot to prove. Diontae's situation's a little bit better, but it's not like he's jawing at Big Ben in his prime.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing. And I would say there are two parts to this. I don't want to classify Johnson as a diva or engaging in diva-like behavior. This wasn't something on the field. It wasn't something in front of people, right, outside of the reasonable possibility that Johnson's the one that leaked this story. We don't know who said it or why. We just know that it was something inside the locker room. It wasn't meant to go public. And those types of things do happen. And I'm sure it wasn't the only time that game or this season that two other people have gotten into it like that.
That's a good point. It's not like T.O. yelling at his offensive coordinator on the sideline.
Or the example that I use, it's not Chad Johnson going into the locker room at halftime of a division of a wild card playoff game and swinging on his position coach. You know, that's different.
That's going to linger a little bit. Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's coming in saying, give me the ball. He's confident in his skills, and he should be. He's a good receiver. Things weren't working out in a lot of places. If it boiled over a little bit, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think in the end, they're both professionals anyway. They're out there to do the job. If it's not working, it's not working that particular time, which frankly, against the Jets offensively, that first half, it wasn't working. So, you know, nobody's really wrong if you look at it. It was all bad. So they all have some, you know, there's a modicum of blame for each of them. And with that, I think the key thing is just to remember it's not, let's sit down with HR and discuss our problems calmly and comfortably. Okay. Right. It's not to do the Tom Brady / Kellen Winslow and try to put in war-like metaphors to it, but it's combat. It's not, you know, nice. They're getting
emotions hurt. Are high.
It's not the kind of environment in which you speak at a calm, reasonable voice. It's chaos on a sideline. There are people running around everywhere, and the locker room is just a smaller, enclosed version of that. It's nuts. I don't know how they keep it organized the way that they do, but you could understand how it could happen, and it's really not that big of a deal. It wasn't meant for public consumption. Not that, you know, we shouldn't hear about it when it comes up or discuss it, but it wasn't meant to get out the way that it did.
Yeah, Again, the timing of this, I'm sure, is less than desirable for the Steelers that it did get out, when it would get out. But again, it has to get out. If you're a reporter and you hear about these things, it's certainly reasonable to report on what's going on. And Jerry Dulac certainly as connected as anybody else. So it's not the validity, but it is weird. The timing is odd. And you do have people let their minds wander. But it is a high-pressure cooker because, with the exception of Antonio Brown basically quitting on his team, there's a reason why a lot of quarterbacks, including a guy with the best resume ever in Tom Brady, is willing to put up with a lot of crap for a very long time, and even vice versa, some receivers getting over their issues with quarterbacks at times because they know, hey, he didn't get a ball, the emotions are high. You got to be really mature to play that position at a really high level and just let it all roll off. Maybe Mitch, maybe because he's a little maybe upset at his age that he is battling with a rookie QB after being a first-round pick himself and being a backup last year and all training camp, all we asked him was about Pickett. Maybe he's a little frustrated with that. I certainly heard from others on that have been on this show that basically heard him kind of say things under his breath. And they've heard from others that, hey, you know, meaning people with the Steelers, that he was already upset and didn't want anyone to ask him a question about Pickett anymore, but he didn't want to forthcomingly say that. So maybe he's boiling over. Maybe Deontay's boiling over. Maybe this team is boiling over. However, they boiled over into a victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And maybe the Bucs had some drama. Maybe Tom Brady's head wasn't fully in it. That was what Big Ben said. But that was a game that the Bucs did not look like themselves. Brady did not have a good game by any means. He finally looked like the cliff might actually be coming close. And the Steelers, not to say they're world beaters, but they got the job done and got the victory. And that included Mitch Trubisky coming in and securing the W for Kenny Pickett. And number to numbers, even though one's a rookie, it's not like either one is head and shoulders above the other. So now we're at a point where there are some that want to put Mitch back in. Mike Tomlin has said that if Kenny Pickett is healthy, if he is cleared, he is the starter, seemingly going with what I said, that once we go rookie, we're going to stick with the rookie. We're going to sink and swim with him. We don't want to waffle. Is that the right decision in your eyes? Is there anything that if Kenny Pickett would get his bell rung and would get hurt that Mitch Trubisky can do to actually secure this position back, since maybe it seems less stable than others in this situation? And how should this be handled? How do you envision this is handled? Because Big Ben also weighed in by saying that, you know, all the respect in the world to Mitch Trubisky, but he doesn't see this as any chance for Mitch to reclaim the position, regardless of what happens again, because once you go to the rookie first rounder, you got to stick with him.
I think the key thing here is the fact that they went out and signed a starting pedigree quarterback, whether he's earned that long term or not. The results speak for themselves.
You didn't want to use the word caliber there.
I think he is a good definition of the NFL's 33rd quarterback. At the same time, though, I think Kenny Pickett probably fits that as well. So to your point, when you're choosing between the two, you're going to go with the guy who has a contract that's appealing to the team next year. Whereas Mitch Trubisky has like a 400% raise coming in. There's no way he's getting that. So when it's time to move on, it's time to move on. I'm not reporting this just out of logic. I think if you look at the timeline of everything that happened, they signed Trubisky with the idea of, we have a starter in place. We're going to figure out what happens from here. Now, if the Chargers come up to us tomorrow and say, we'll give you Justin Herbert for a fourth round pick, they'd probably take that deal. They're okay with that. And then Trubisky's not going to be the starter anymore. To a lesser extent, if there's a quarterback that they like who falls to 20 overall, they're going to take him. And perhaps, you know, Trubisky is, you know, understandably a little burned by that. But yeah, I'm sorry, there's no way with the contract that he signed, for the amount of money that he signed, and, you know, his performance to date, there's no way he could think that that job is absolutely his without a question. On top of that, though, he got 3.5 games. He didn't perform. So to the point that when you go with the rookie, you can't go back. I agree with that philosophically. I think that's the right approach, just because, look, you know, you gave the veteran the opportunity. In that time, it's not as if Kenny Pickett didn't learn at all. He was sitting at home with us, slugging beers and figuring it out on TV. He's in the meeting rooms. He's learning how all of this works. That evolution is important. They didn't want to throw him out there in week one, but week five is different. There's a lot of things that have happened. He's adjusting to the game itself, the speed of it, seeing it, understanding the calls because he has to make them onto the field. He sees how they're preparing Trubisky, and he's traveling, coming back, playing a home game, dealing with all of that is part of being a professional. If they deemed that Pickett was good enough, not just to be the in-game spark, as Tomlin said, but the starter the next week, it's tough to want to go back for that. But let's keep in mind that this is a whole other element. This is what's so interesting about playing the Dolphins now. You're going into a prime time game with two quarterbacks who last time they played left the field with concussion symptoms. You 100%. Have to kind of wonder, you know, they played very cautiously for obvious as well as PR reasons.
And as we know, the Steelers really care about their perception as well. So I don't think the Rooney family or the Steelers are going to want to get into a situation where every former quarterback who's on a national broadcast is crying his eyes out and ripping the franchise for playing a guy. Not saying that's going to happen, or if they do play him, it's not a smart decision. Both hits and every concussion is very, very different. I'm not a doctor, but that is not a look the Steelers want to be in, because the Dolphins are in a very bad look PR-wise at that point when Tua played 5 days later.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. And the fact that this is on a national stage in a pretty intriguing game for a lot of reasons. There's a 100%. Lot of storylines in this game.
100%.
So it makes you wonder if he clears concussion protocol, which is the rule that they have set up. That does not mean he has or does not have a concussion. It means he cleared protocol, which is the jointly accepted baseline of tests that he has to pass, that both the league and the union signed off on. If he does that, he plays, and he has to this point. They're going to monitor it. That's what they're going to tell us. And obviously, I believe they will monitor it. But the idea now is that Kenny Pickett will start against Tua Tagovailoa in Sunday Night Football. If one of them gets hurt, it's hard not to take him out of the game. So 100%. It's like, oh boy, we'll see how far the perception needs to go, because if he gets hit in the head in any way, either one of them gets hit in the head in any way, shape, or form, and he comes back in, there are going to be a lot of questions about it. So are we completely against the idea that Trubisky plays again? I'm not now. I mean, this is a real tough time on a big stage going up against what has become the face of all of this, of the evolution of it.
Yeah,
it's wild that they're the two that are going to square off.
And we both been covering this team for long enough to be able to realize this, that even though the Steelers have certainly done things at times and had players do things at times that warrants the drama and the coverage in that regard, they also sometimes have some freaking bad luck that involves them being in drama. We talked about the bad timing of the report coming out of the Trubisky and Deontay Johnson altercation, how the Daddy Long Leg connection was able to just run amok through that story. And then now to have this situation where they're deciding between two quarterbacks, one with a concussion in protocol in a primetime game with the Dolphins, who basically are the face of this and would love to pass the baton along, I'm sure, because I am sure that if Pickett gets his bell rung, returns to the game, and Tua goes all the way through the game fine, you might hear some subtle jabs in the postgame. It's not just us that clearly has an issue with
considering
this.
Keep in mind, Miami's backup went down with a concussion.
Right.
They had
their
third string guy come in who got hurt. He hurt his hand or whatever it was. Right. So they had to put the backup back in, who didn't start because he missed all of practice that week because he was in the protocol.
Yeah, yeah.
So he played anyway. Yeah. And he was still okay. They tried to do everything right and they still got burned by it. They're on a 3-game losing streak because
they weren't on Monday Night Football. They were on Thursday, which is Amazon, where Ryan Fitzpatrick is currently employed on the national broadcast. He's a guy that has experience with that franchise and tons of concussions and literally went out there and said, I know Tua personally. I talked to him yesterday and he told me this. So to your point again, you know what those former players are going to do, namely Richard Sherman, Ryan Fitzpatrick, et cetera. They are going to do the whole thing they said in that broadcast. They are more than try to ask them about different play and packages. They're going to sit there. They're going to try to look at these QBs. They're going to do the eye test, try to see if they're talking to them and intelligently having a conversation. And then if there's any bell ringing, they're going to go out there and say, I talked to him and he didn't seem fine to me. He shouldn't have played.
As soon as he's hurt on the ground, 100%, they'll start to say it.
They're going
to
unload and be like, I knew in my heart he shouldn't have played. So that's exactly what's going to go down. They already got the script ready. So it is a very bad situation for the Steelers in that regard. And I guess the easier part of that, if you do have to make a decision against starting Kenny Pickett, although again, sounds like Mike Tomlin, if he's cleared, he's going to play, is that even though Mitch has had a lot more time to show something and has not, and Pickett is a rookie, so you give him tons more time on his contract, that the team did have a little bit of a quote-unquote spark with Mitch. And then he has looked okay enough. It's not like it's necessarily the Doc Mason situation of a few years ago in terms of their overall numbers being closer. So what would be the difference for you of this Steelers offense? What has been the difference? What do you see being the difference of the Steelers offense with Mitch and with Kenny Pickett? Because I'm also going to agree with you before you unload there that people are maybe making a little bit too much of that for this year in terms of this offense. There are so many other problems with this offense, and that could obviously connect to the coordinator or also other pieces to this offense that are not going to be fixed regardless of who is in there, unless you are putting an MVP in his prime and they're going to the Hall of Fame, which is not an option. So out of Mitch or Kenny Pickett, you're right. So we're talking about Mitch Trubisky here and Kenny Pickett. Pickett, a rookie that's going to – he's had some solid plays, but there also have been some really – that's a rookie right in there. And then
there's been
some times with Mitch that also has given you – there are times with Mitch that gives you flashes to say, huh, that's why he was a first-round pick. Maybe it took him 4 years to figure it out. So what's the differences of the Steelers' offense for people that are just continuously debating, oh, if you throw in my guy, it'll be – we'll be undefeated right now. Why is that not accurate?
I think that the gap between the two is a lot more narrow than people are going to want to suggest. And let's add option number three here. There are still the Rudolph stans who think that he's head and shoulders above the other two.
Sure.
And it's like, look – You know, I hate to say this. I got chastised.
And now they really might want to hold on to him. I heard some reports that maybe he's being shopped again. But if you got one guy in concussion protocol.
Yeah, you throw the feelers out there.
You got to get something back.
That's not unusual.
Valuable.
Depending on what it is. And we can get to that for sure. Because that's also a really interesting debate, considering Steelers don't have any draft picks next year.
Right.
And they're going to need some. So do you want a third string quarterback who's not even dressing in
injury situations? And I've talked about, and we've all talked about ad nauseum, but yeah, you can give me that later, but you go ahead on
going into Pickett versus Trubisky. They're every quarterback is different from one another. The results though should not be enough for anyone to say absolutely this or that. For me, I would probably go with Pickett. One, you can't get around the fact that he's the rookie first-round draft pick. He's your future. There is little to no evidence. All things staying normal, he's not the starter next year.
Right.
You have to roll with Pickett. You tried Trubisky. It didn't work. He was signed to be beaten out for his job, and now he's served his role. It's time to move on and try to get Pickett better with game experience. That said, Pickett makes a lot more mistakes than he's currently criticized for, being the rookie, being the guy from Pitt, being the non-Mitch Trubisky quarterback. The backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in town. When you don't have Ben Roethlisberger for 18 years, you can see other teams, you know, that have that type of issue. That's going to wear off eventually. I thought Todd Bowles and the Bucs defense did a really good job confusing him. He threw a lot of passes into that spot where only my guy is going to catch it, but it's going to be an impossible catch. In fact, Deontay Johnson, you know, would have more to complain about with Pickett, I think.
Yeah, and that's interesting that the players do kind of seemingly, maybe because he's a rookie, I don't want to say they give him rope, but it's almost like a vibe that I'm not going to yell at him.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. You have to understand the position that he's in. He's still coming along. You don't have time for it out on the field. You need the plays there, but your patience is probably going to be a little bit less. At the same time, I think Pickett's ceiling has been a little bit higher. I think up until the second half of the Bucs game, at least, we didn't see Trubisky do much. My question has been, is this a product of Mitch Trubisky not feeling inclined to try to pick up anything deeper, to make any, you know, a little bit more complicated throws? Or is that the byproduct of the coaching that he's receiving? Because to be honest with you, in my opinion, Trubisky seems upset about being benched beyond, I don't want to be benched because I'm the starting quarterback. To me, it almost kind of seems between the lines, I'm doing exactly what you told me to do, and now you're benching me as if I'm the problem here, where that might not be necessarily the case. I say that under my breath more than anything, but after his performance against Tampa Bay, it looked to me like he went out there and just said, you know what, screw you. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I need to earn a job next year.
Yeah.
So third and 15, there's Claypool. I'm letting it rip.
Well, that's what Big Ben literally said
this season. Yeah, right.
Big Ben said. That he said, I watched a guy that basically said, I don't give an F, and I'm going to try to save my career, whether it be here in Pittsburgh or elsewhere. And Ben has certainly done that before. We all know he's brushed off coordinator plays and done his own thing and had success.
Well, maybe it's not so much the play that he's blowing off. It's the read.
I'm not saying it's even disrespectful or a bad decision to do that. Sometimes you have to do it. But my point is, Ben, of all Hall of Fame quarterbacks, is somebody that certainly probably can articulate if he's watching a quarterback do that. So maybe he, by saying that, is saying he saw him do that. He didn't connect the dots to bash Matt Canada, but that could have been what he was alluding to as well.
Yeah, I think to some degree, one, I mean, let's be honest here. Matt Canada deserves some criticism, you know, to be
more this year than last year, too, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a 16-point-a-game offense. It's, you know, the buck stops somewhere. What he is designing, calling, giving direction on coaching is not working very well relative to NFL team peers. Okay. That's just a fact. Who he's throwing the ball to ultimately is up to the quarterback, but if they are stressing with him, ball control, take what's there, can never go broke by making a profit, just pick up 2-3 yards. That offense that generated 15 points a game and is without question the worst cliche in all of sports, you absolutely can go broke collecting 2-3 yard gains up and down the field. I'll show you the 2020 and 2021 Pittsburgh Steelers if you want to look at that. Not good offensive teams that didn't get the ball down the field. Now, the depth of those routes is up to the play call itself, and those routes were there. It's not that that wasn't a part of the play. And most of the time when Najee Harris is catching the ball, that's not the function of the play. We know that because there's no blocking out there for him. He's an outlet. He is, this didn't work, so go to your check down and just try to get the ball up the field. It looked to me like Trubisky just basically said, no. We know that because go back to the Patriots game. Remember the second half of the Patriots game. The Steelers had a lead. Patriots came back and just kind of out-fundamentaled them down the stretch. Two consecutive third and long situations in the fourth quarter. Trubisky stepped back to pass, saw a blitz coming, and immediately went to Harris. Immediately. Belichick is smart enough to know that's what he's going to do. So he bracketed Harris in the open field. Now, all due respect, we've taken up too much time here already. I'm not going to get into Najee Harris, but Najee Harris is not converting 3rd and 8 from 10 yards away from the sticks. Okay?
Right, and I could even ask you if you, because he then kind of unloaded a little bit about the truth about his injury that people were speculating for weeks on end that he wasn't fully healthy. So that excuse maybe is also dissipated by him now saying he believes he's 100%. But Najee Harris overall has not been what he is supposed to be and what he's getting paid to do, for sure.
Not even close. I mean, I know this ruffles feathers, but Najee Harris is at best right now an average NFL running back.
Yeah, average. 100%.
He's not good. He adds more in the passing game than I thought that he would. He looks a little bit better than I thought he was going to coming out of college, but as a runner, it might have gotten worse. I mean, he doesn't see what is an opening in the NFL. Calling it a hole is probably not the most, you know, astute thing to say. Leonard Fournette had a couple holes and he got through them, but for the most part, they bottled him up pretty good. He's pretty beaten up. He's not all that fast. He doesn't accelerate particularly well. If we want to give credence to Harris's injury, which I 100% believe that he has an injury.
Yeah. I think everyone at this point, right.
But either way, when you're duck walking toward a hole, that's not an issue with your foot. That's an issue with your eyes. You're not seeing where you need to go. And I do understand the offensive line is not the hogs from the 80s, okay? They're not the greatest unit that you could put out there. They're not that bad, though. You should
better than last year.
You should be able to make some hay with that. Now, he's not going to be, you know, in 6 yards a carry. But Jaylen Warren finds enough space in this battered, you know, depleted offensive line to pick up a couple chunk plays here and there.
And
Harris
also
doesn't do that nearly often enough for the amount of times he's getting the ball.
Until Harris proves it, now, while saying he's fully healthy, the negative of being an Alabama running back on a dynasty that then gets drafted is the reason why Saban's built that is his offensive lines at Bama are some of the best in college football history every year. So he is basically running through gaping holes in college. Not to say he's not getting yards after the catch, but then the NFL, those gaping holes go to nothing, and he got to try to make something happen. And the yards per carry weren't there last year, even though the overall yards were. So he's going to get production off of just getting fed the rock. But you can see that individually speaking, he's not helping the situation by any means. Maybe he wasn't healthy, though. So now we'll see if that can matriculate in. But Yeah, that is interesting. So then I guess I would, I actually do want to kind of close up on Pickett and Trubisky. And obviously you just can't go completely rogue, but if for some reason Trubisky finds himself back in there, is there a chance that this debate is just going to unfortunately plague our lives all season because Pickett's going to probably play again, obviously, if he's healthy. He'll probably give you the same level of production that he's been doing. It'll just be this steady strip, probably. He is a rookie. I don't think it's going to be horrendously worse. I don't know if there'll be horrendously better either, but there might be moments. But very likely that if Trubisky gets back in there, which is probably likely to happen at some point, he will give a half for the people that want to support him to say, wow, when he does pretty much go rogue, he is way better, which then connects the dots to maybe both people in terms of people that are on the Pickett bandwagon or on the Trubisky bandwagon. They do get together and all seemingly hate Matt Canada. So maybe that's where the blame will go. Right. Well, that's the commonality at the end of the season. And his excuses of last year of an aging quarterback and a really bad offensive line do go away this year when that aging quarterback is gone and the O-line has been better. So the rope with him is not nearly as long, but is there a possibility that if Trubisky play, you know, keeps this up and goes rogue, he's going to continuously be able to prove this, get himself a job next year, and make this a very annoying next few months for us, basically?
Put it like this. I got called out at the beginning of the season for probably repeating ad nauseum the Bill Parcells axiom. When you have two quarterbacks, you have none. When you have three, I don't think you have more than none.
Yeah.
What that means is to avoid the situation the Steelers are now in, you need to have a dude. You need to know who that is, and you need to know week to week who it's going to be. I think what Tomlin is saying at this point, that Pickett is the starter, is their attempt to say we have one. Now, it also doesn't mean necessarily that one and two are all that much different from each other.
Or that you don't need two, because usually quarterbacks just don't play every game.
Right. You just need to have one that you're going with, and that's it. Sometimes you just need to make a decision and go with it. I think they had eyes on Pickett taking over at some point, and I think they found the opportunity to do that on time, early, whatever. They found the opportunity to do that, and they're going to hang with that as long as they can. I don't think the plan would be that there is a hook to put on Kenny Pickett at halftime of the game. But you never say never either. You know, be reasonable, even if it's a 99% chance that won't happen. It could. He could go out and throw six picks and a half. He can go Nathan Peterman for all we know and have to be benched. That could happen. Reasonably speaking, though, I really think that the leash on Pickett is going to be a lot longer than it was on Trubisky, and that has to do with pedigree. He was drafted. He's the rookie. We've seen Trubisky's ceiling, okay? He had the opportunity. I argued this entire offseason with people that think, well, just give him a chance. Matt Nagy's terrible. Look, a good NFL quarterback becomes a good NFL quarterback. It is not because of the offensive coordinator, okay?
It's harder, though, because I know I argued back at you a little bit at that time. You got to be in the right situation. I'm not saying Trubisky has proven anything to give you any glimpse that he's necessarily someone you want to give the keys to Cadillac with. I didn't think that in the offseason either. But it's very true. You got to be in the right situation. And it's also pretty fair to say, this was even brought up with Sam Darnold with the Jets for a while, that if you're going to have a situation that is horrendously designed to kill a guy at QB, that Bears situation was pretty much it. So if he's like a tweener that maybe could be a top 20 in the league and maybe start and then maybe get one or two Pro Bowls in 10 years versus with Nagy and the Bears, he's more of like a top 40 QB who's going to be out of the league at 29. The Bears sent him on the path to be the guy out of the league before he's 30 years old, whereas if maybe he was in a better situation, he'd at least have a career.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship. At the end of the day, though, the quarterback is pulling 80% and the coordinator is pulling 20%.
Okay.
I know that the schematic guys really want to make it out to be like you can game plan for success with anybody. It just simply isn't true. Most of the time, a plan doesn't work all that well off script. Okay. So you saw it with Pickett against Tampa Bay. Did a great job on script. You expect that. It's good to see. Good. You're sharp. You figured it out. From there, you're going to make the adjustment. So after your first 12, 15 plays, you're going to adjust to what the defense is doing, to how they're moving that particular day, any injuries that come up, those kinds of things. That's where the scheme really, really needs, or the ingenuity of an offense really needs to take fold. I felt Canada did a pretty good job of that. I the jet sweeps work consistently. It's kind of crazy how many yards per carry they get off of those. He does a decent enough job with that. It's more the in-between doesn't work very well for either quarterback, but I can't help but feel if you had a more talented quarterback in there, you're going to have a little bit more success, because that's exactly what the NFL wanted to build, and they did. Right. All rules favor the quarterback. Everything favors the quarterback. If the quarterback is good consistently and is playing well that day, you have a pretty good chance of winning that game. You know, there's a reason Peyton Manning didn't lose very often. Brady doesn't lose very often.
Right.
Good quarterbacks save whatever it is that you're trying to do.
And there's also a reason why we've seen throughout NFL history, you have a guy who's a no-name coach, maybe for the casual fan. The QB comes in there, has an elite season. He's a great QB. And all of a sudden, oh, my God, this coordinator is now this great coach. And he ends up getting a big job.
He gets his pick.
He gets out of there, and he's no longer with the Hall of Fame QB, and he now maybe gets a raise. He's either a head coach or a coordinator, another situation with a quarterback that's average or worse, and all of a sudden that coach doesn't look anywhere near as great as he was before. So, yes, and then there are some that are able to segue to one Hall of Fame to another because they know they need that disguise. So they're the smart coaches. But, yes, that is absolutely a true thing that 100% exists as well here. Neil Coulong, managing editor with the NFL Wire here, mic drop on the Believe Network. You can find, download, and subscribe to all of our Believe Network shows, but certainly mic drop here throughout Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. Tune in anywhere you can get your podcasts, and also on the Believe Network YouTube channel. Now, I also do want to ask, going into this game with the Dolphins, the Steelers right now are 7-point underdogs. And whether it be Kenny Pickett, who the assumption is he's starting, or somehow Mitch Trubisky, it doesn't appear to be a catastrophic difference for this game coming up here. We did detail the oddity that'll be the underrated story entering the game, but could very much be what we have to discuss and cover after the game, separate from what actually happens on the field. So maybe that actually will be a masking of whatever Trubisky or Pickett does, if that's just the talk after the game in terms of the concussion protocol situation again. But the Dolphins favored by 7, they've certainly have kind of been exposed recently. Granted, they haven't had Tua. Tua clearly is their MVP when he was in there. They looked great. He looked great. Not the case without him, but it's taken him a while to get going. Last year, they certainly didn't look like what they've looked so far this year. They are home. That's a Dolphin franchise that generally lays some hiccups and doesn't get it done at the end of the season. The Steelers, in the midst of this weirdness year where they have a weird quarterback controversy, but I think also, Neil, the other reason why this is such a discussion that's going to plague our lives, it's the Steelers involved in this. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers haven't been involved in this with the exception of Duck and Mason because of Ben for so long. And if you get into a situation at the end of the year where Pickett's the guy you're riding with, or Trubisky has to come in for a half and Pickett gets hurt, and then you're winning with Trubisky, you're going to have Mike Tomlin and Cam Hayward going to be sitting in there saying, yeah, Pickett's our guy, but we don't want to have a losing season. And if we throw Pickett back in there, we could have a more likelihood of a losing season. Other teams may be willing to punt the year. The Steelers are not. They would rather crawl in at 9-8 and lose in the wild card round by 20 than not get in. So with that mentality, that's certainly an edge to get Trubisky back in there if he does perform or even does well in meetings. But with all of that said, what are your thoughts about this matchup with the Dolphins? Why is this spread at 7 favoring Miami? Is that a spread that the Steelers should feel disrespected by, or can you make some sense about the Dolphins being favored by a touchdown despite similar situations and teams kind of feeling similar most recently?
I think you open it up. Start with this. If you're making the line, home team -3, pretty typical.
Yeah.
3.5, call it 3.5 for prime time.
Sure.
Home games. If teams are equal, that's probably where you're going to end up. In Pittsburgh, in this market, we're going to hyper-analyze everything about that win and think that it's great. The reality is there were a lot of warts in that game. It wasn't fantastic or anything. It just wasn't 38-3 like it was against the Bills. They came back. They responded very nicely. You have to be excited about that, considering your entire secondary was hurt.
They needed the win.
The Steelers probably needed that more than anything else. But the Bucs have no idea what the Steelers are going to do on defense because none of the players ever played. The Steelers have full advantage of that. And we saw that early. I think if you gave them another quarter, Brady would have figured it out and they would have been able to march a little bit more, which goes to the point about Trubisky coming in and icing the game on two drives, even more to how important that was, considering where the game was going. There was only so much time they're going to get away with. The Dolphins have that film now. Do we bank on the Steelers staying at the level that we saw against Tampa Bay, which I don't think Tampa Bay played particularly well in that game? I'm not trying to take anything away from the Steelers, but primetime matchup on the road. Tua comes back. The Dolphins are 3-0 with Tua. They're 0-3 in games that he didn't finish. You can't argue with that. On top of that, Steelers secondary against what, in my opinion, through the meager amount of six games, the offensive player of the year in Tyreek Hill. I don't know how the Steelers are going to stop that guy. Nobody has stopped that guy. He's on pace to break the yardage record this year. And that's the highlight stat that he has. And that's saying he has 50 catches in six games.
And half of it's without Tua. As you said, half of it's without Tua.
He's playing with something called Skylar Thompson for a time. Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
And he's still lighting everything up.
Yeah.
You get Tua back in there. They have that explosive playmaking ability. They're at home on prime time. I don't think 7 points is ridiculous. And honestly, certainly if Steelers fans disagree with that, take them to cover. I'm just saying I don't think the spread is all that wrong. Let's see where it lands, though. Let's see what happens. There are a lot of factors and details that need to come out, up to and including the Steelers injury report, which we'll find out Wednesday afternoon for the first time, if the Steelers are going to get all their guys back or not. That'll probably swing it one way or another. But if it ends up lower than six, I'd be surprised. Dolphins are a realistic favorite for this game.
Yeah, and as you said, usually, especially when you have even matchups, unless one is a dominant team, the home team does get a 3 or 3.5 point favorite swing just from the jump before anybody knows anything. Again, unless you're talking about a 2-win team, basically.
Yeah.
For it to get to 7, Vegas is basically saying that they're really confident a Dolphins victory is happening. I mean, when they get to 7.
People are putting a lot of action onto the Dolphins at the opening 3.5.
Right.
And
I will say, Neil, the last time Steeler fans were all over Twitter upset about a spread was the Patriot game spread, and Vegas was on the money.
Yep.
So Vegas usually is
they're
smart.
Usually right.
They are usually right. I will say that. This spread, by the way, also by DraftKings at the 7, so it can be tweaked a little bit with different sports books. It may move. Generally speaking, though, when you're in the middle of the week, what I've noticed with spreads, whether it be college or the NFL, they certainly can move. But it would be a catastrophic craziness if this goes from 7 all the way to 3. You're looking you're looking like it's 7, maybe it'll go to 6 at the best for the Steelers.
And that's a pretty sizable.
It could even go 7.5 if people keep piling on Miami and you get better reports from the Tua camp than, say, the Pickett camp. So,
for it to jump that far, the Steelers would have acquired Justin Herbert leading into the game. Otherwise, there's no way it's going to swing. Nobody is coming off the bench to make up 4 points for the Steelers. There's just no way.
Yeah. Now, the one bet that maybe has some legs that I actually dumped on before the season that I'll just throw out there was that the Kenny Pickett offensive rookie of the year, then connected to the team MVP. If somehow this continues, they may throw him the team MVP award. But I thought that was insanity because if you're not starting week one, you're pretty much well behind the eight ball to snag that thing. But who knows with the way this season is unfolding. Now, out of any other spreads that have existed here that have moved a little bit, and it's not necessarily in any way, but that there are any spreads that are favoring the Steelers to do anything of note as a team this year, even though that's going to be their goal, even though there is an opinion out there that I got killed for before this weekend that the Steelers secretly would probably be a little better off not winning that much this year, and then you just keep building around Pickett. But if, say, they want to crawl in, there is a plus 20,000 for Super Bowl championship odds and a plus 10,000 for the AFC right now. That's where those lie. Yeah, so that's even after the Buccaneers situation. So it does show you the bettors realizing, hey, the Buccaneers, honestly, since Brady got there, that might be top 2 or 3 worst performances for the team in those few years. They had that one against the Saints. They randomly couldn't play well against the Saints. And then there's this one. I think those are the two debates we're talking about here. So, and everything was a perfect storm. And as much as Tom Brady's a robot, and I'm not going to get into his personal life, he is a human being. So that may, and that's kind of what Ben was alluding to, that, hey, it may be a rough go. It could linger on a field. Again, he wasn't there for the walkthrough, even though that's not why, when you're a Hall of Famer.
He certainly didn't do anything to lay those accusations to rest.
Right. He had a weirdly bad game that even in games that he hasn't
looked
half, good
in. He was really off. Just the throw. It wasn't defensive pressure that got him early. He missed on a few balls. He looked like
what Brady looked to me, and you're obviously always going, you're going to have some games that you don't have as great of stats as other games. He looked like, for the first time, honestly, in 15 years, he didn't have control of the game.
Yeah.
He almost looked like a deer in headlights a little bit out there at times. Like, I don't know what to do. And even in games he has lost, he looked control, and then somebody else did something else, or else something happened, or he threw a bad pick. But I haven't seen him really look like that in a while. And, you know, he is 45. So unless this is finally the end of the career, the personal life lingering in, or you know what, the Buccaneers have also dealt with tons of injuries. The guy they brought in that Brady wanted, they were trying to have Julio Jones. He can't get on the field. So they got some things going on, too, that maybe could be part of that as well. Last thing I do want to ask you, though, because you teased it a little bit, and I've talked about this ad nauseum on shows, so I didn't want to make it a highlight, but I'm just curious now, your opinion. I don't think I've heard this from you. What would you do? Because the conversation now has moved from Mason Rudolph to really people that – the only people talking about Mason Rudolph as much are people that just hate Mason Rudolph. They want to make everything about Mason Rudolph. That's really where the Mason Rudolph topic comes in. It's mostly been about Pickett and Trubisky now. But Mason Rudolph is still there. He does exist. He is still getting paid. He is on this team. He is QB3. He was QB2 last year. Clearly, and I do agree, they kind of had the thinking going into this offseason, okay – I don't believe they hate him anywhere near as much as some fans, but he's not really going to be our guy for the next 10 years. So let's go get a veteran. That was a solid ad, a low-risk move to bring in a former first-rounder in Trubisky. You bring him in, and you let them compete. And I think in their heart of hearts, they never thought Pickett, who they were in love with, would be there for them in the draft. And no other QB was taken in the first round. He fell to pick 20. He was the only first-round QB. Malik Willis was not taken in the first round, etc. But they loved Pickett more than Willis. He was most NFL-ready, and they didn't think he'd be there. But then once he's there, as you said, you got to just say, we're throwing an audible in. We don't care who else is here. We could have Big Ben in his prime still here. We're in love with this guy for our future. We got to do it. We got to do what the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers years ago. We cannot avoid this man who fell in our laps, and then they got into this mess. But speaking on Mason Rudolph, what would you do? What do you think's going to happen? He's in rumors again. Yes, it makes sense to get something for him and get more than have him be out there in street clothes, but he has established himself as enough of a backup that they want to get some type of late draft compensation, and yet there's still not been any movement on him moving on. I'd also imagine, and what we kind of heard from him at the end of camp and early in the season, once he officially became QB3, you could hear it in his voice. He wants the hell out of there, but he's still there.
Yeah. It's, I don't blame him wanting to go somewhere where he, at least get a chance to play during.
You're
game.
An athlete. I mean, right. What's the point?
Yeah. It's not the case for him in Pittsburgh. Right. Right decision, wrong decision. I'll say this. What I know is you have three quarterbacks, none of whom could possibly convince anybody of a reasonable mind we're going to have great seasons within this offense right now. Right. Okay. So Rudolph may as well be Trubisky. It's the same difference either way. The Steelers, keep in mind, going back to the unfortunate passing of Dwayne Haskins,
right.
They picked up his RFA tender at the original round level. Sure. That was $3 million. This team was casting as wide a net as it could for a quarterback.
And that was after Rudolph seemingly beat out Haskins the year earlier in camp, and then certainly was QB2 last year. So I know there were some that wanted Haskins, and then obviously he unfortunately passes away. But Rudolph thought, I'm sure, I at least beat out him, if nothing else. And the Steelers were basically saying, a little bit, but it could go back the other way.
That's what I mean, though. If you're going to lower your bar down to say – the starting job here is everything, as opposed to the starter needs to be able to grow. They need to be able to get better. I'm sorry, Mason Rudolph did not show that in ample opportunities any more than Mitch Trubisky did. Now, Kenny Pickett, I agree 1,000% with you. I don't think that they anticipated Pickett falling to 20. I'm not suggesting that Kenny Pickett should have been a top five pick, and he hasn't really shown that that's the case either. I just don't think that they felt that was going to happen, and they did not, and they do not have the trade assets to have gone up to get him. So, in other words, if he falls, great. They thought about it. There's no way they didn't. 100%. They needed a quarterback. Teams tend to go after certain positions. They're going to scout and evaluate and look for talent in various rounds at those positions because they need to fill those for the immediate future as well as 3 years down the line. There's no way quarterback was not very high on that list, okay? You can't tell me Trubisky did anything to that because I know that they signed him to a two-year contract. And the second year of that is basically a balloon payment that they can get out from under if they don't want it. He was given what's essentially a one-year deal with team insurance in case they don't find a better option and rewarding the player for being the last man standing in that debate. Rudolph, they did the same thing a year ago. They gave him an extension on draft day, which is basically them saying, we're not going to draft a quarterback, so we need to make sure we've got a guy in tow for next year because this is going to be it for Ben, and we know that. So they lined all this up strategically, but never once did they say, we're set with this. This is exactly what we're going to do and why. So why does that matter for Rudolph? Rudolph was there as an insurance policy. Trubisky is there as an insurance policy. Yeah. They got Pickett, and he's the project. What they don't have is a dude, okay? They don't have the guy that they want. They have the guy they drafted. I'm not 100% convinced. You can't look at Kenny Pickett after six quarters of play to this point and say, this is absolutely our guy.
No.
There's no way.
If he didn't go to Pitt, he wouldn't have any main people saying he's the guy either. Let's be
probably,
real. He's a popular figure, and the fans will give him more rope than others. And it'll be interesting if Matt Canada or when Matt Canada is let go a year from now or 2 years from now, if the fans then on the new OC say, well, that's his fault and still not Pickett's fault, who's then 2 or 3 years in. Well, but as we stand know now, that
they will, because it's exactly what happened with them.
That's what they do with every OC.
Randy Fichter was the problem. Probably. You remember that? It's like, no, team is just not nearly as talented as people.
That's true. Think that it is. But yeah, that's the difference. Right.
Now let's get into the whole point here. I'm all over the board. I know that. It's just this topic is so interesting to me.
I know you're into it. I wanted to hear it almost from me more than anything else.
As far as Rudolph is concerned, right now, this is a team that has five draft picks this coming draft, and you don't have tradable assets. All right, Chase Claypool is probably the only one, and after the game he just had, you're not trading him. So
unless Rudolph, his values peak, because it wouldn't have been where it is now 2 weeks earlier.
This goes into what you were saying as far as if Pickett's our guy, we're playing to win, we're going to do that. The Steelers don't want to be 6-11 if they can be 7-10. That's a huge difference to them.
Yeah,
Claypool is not the guy to trade if that's the case. Off season, we'll have me back on come March and we'll talk about it.
Definitely.
But for now, they don't have anybody who's tradable for assets that they need to have. You know, ironically, there's not even a Melvin Ingram who wants out of town, as far as we know. They're not able to allocate anything. But what are you going to get for Mason Rudolph? You need a Dolphins-like situation where suddenly all three of your quarterbacks are hurt for Rudolph to have any value. And the trade deadline is, what, 11 days away? So I don't think they can get anything for him. And knowing that, it needs to be an emergency situation. They're going to say, we want Mason, he's a part of the team, blah, blah, blah. Somebody offered him a fourth for him today, he's gone. There's no question.
Yeah, so then you definitely are on the camp of the reason why he's not been dealt yet is the value in the offers or the rumors or what they think will be, whatever the case is not enough for them in their situation, versus the other opinion, which has existed, that they actually are wanting to keep him as a security because they are really not sold on anyone. So at worst case scenario, especially with Pickett already having a concussion now, if Pickett has a concussion and Trubisky plays poorly for 2 or 3 weeks, they actually would throw in Mason Rudolph out there and say, at minimum, he's at least no longer making mistakes, even though he can't score a touchdown.
At least he's justifying his salary. I mean, honestly, if you want to talk about it in terms of Mason Rudolph being on the roster or not being on the roster, odds of him being cut are way better than him being traded. Who would give up something for Mason Rudolph right now? I mean, again, you need an emergency situation, and that's hard, you know? What
and the ones that existed in the NFL,
and that closed up pretty quickly.
Well, and the ones that existed so far in the NFL this year that have been brought up, say the Dallas Cowboys, yep. Obviously you had Cooper Rush, who's played certainly well enough for a backup QB.
He did what Rudolph games. Would have done.
and you could make an argument that at that time, I know I did, and Old Takes Exposed likes to throw me up every time for that take, that I did at that time think that Mason Rudolph would have been a better play for you versus Cooper Rush, who, let's yeah. be honest, I believe Will Greer beat out Cooper Rush in the preseason, and if Will Greer was healthy, maybe he would could have been the QB too. He played really could well be. In the preseason. So, and he hasn't been healthy. That's why he's been just used in scout team. So Cooper Rush got lucky. The guy he was competing against that was playing better than him in the preseason got hurt, had a groin injury. That was really what allowed him to still be QB2. And then he certainly played well, but now he's QB2 probably forever. But who knows?
Regardless, he's QB2 forever. Yeah, yeah. He's not yeah, right. starter for anybody.
If I'm Mason Rudolph and if I'm Will Greer, I'm both saying I got to get out of here because clearly he's QB2 here. But if we're talking 4 weeks ago, that was certainly an up-in-the-air certain debate. And these guys' draft pick situations were much better than where Cooper Rush was as well. So that was a whole thing. And maybe the Cowboys offense is difficult and Jerry Jones was just never going to make that move. But once that ship sailed and they were like sink or swim, we're with Cooper Rush for 4 or 5 weeks, and it certainly has worked out. Then again, where would – and Jared Goff played better than some would have thought, and maybe they need a backup, but they're not winning a championship this year. Really, are why are they giving up a draft pick for a backup?
There's just no need to acquire – there are a lot of Mason. Right. I know that the Rudolph fans hate this, but there are a lot of Mason Rudolphs in the league. That isn't to say that he's bad. The main thing you need to remember with quarterbacks, there are like 7 or 8 elite talents that you're going to build championship level teams around, plus or minus a season or two.
Sure.
There's a middle level in which the guys are all right, but nobody's really convinced they're going to do much. And then there are like 60 guys that are probably about the same, plus or minus opportunity and salary. Okay. Rudolph has a high salary for a guy that's not going to be a starter in an ideal situation.
Yeah.
And that pick that up.
Right. Nobody. That's exactly why that if you are in your brain considering Cooper Rush, Will Greer, Mason Rudolph, if you give them 5 or 6 weeks, it's very likely they're doing the same things.
Yeah.
But yep, you're probably thinking one of those three guys has never seen our playbook, has not been with our team for at least a year. And has a salary that's worse than the other two guys. So he's certainly 3 out of those 3 for you. And that could be, I think part of why though, the Mason stands that you're bringing up have to exist or somehow I get thrown into this mess sometimes is because there's then a whole other contingent that thinks he's not even in the top 90 quarterbacks that exist, that Duck was better than him. Mason Rudolph's career in terms of a polarizing conversation has been so up. You could make a 30 for 30 just on the Mason Rudolph story.
And you I'd and watch I both it, know honestly. Too. It's not about football. So
right, and that's where those people. I don't believe it is about football. That if Mason Rudolph was lights out and your team was winning, they would find a reason to not be happy with it. And in the end of the day, they don't want the Steelers to win with him. They would actually rather lose without him. So those people exist. Then there are the people that are overrating him, and then there are the people that either want him as a security. And then there are the people that maybe realize the Steelers got to get some value for them. There are legitimately 4, 5, 6 opinions that all are a part of this one debate, which is why it's very frustrating that it just will not ever end.
Hey, so and there's a really small group of people that think that Mason Rudolph is just simply a backup quarterback in the NFL. And we are talking way too in-depth about it. We know the answer. Okay? Right. It's not right. this.
That's
it's
that
not
this that convoluted. That really is the answer. Honestly, that really is the answer. He's legitimately a backup QB.
He will sign somewhere next year. He will be in the NFL next year.
He
is the best way to put it.
He is good enough to be a backup. He is not bad enough to be only in the XFL. He is certainly better than the XFL. He is legitimately a backup in the NFL. He's probably better than QB3, which is why he's probably frustrated at QB3.
Right,
but
that's a unique situation, though. You're talking about a free agent signing with a first round draft pick, and they kept him. That situation doesn't come up a whole lot in the NFL.
No,
look, if Andy Dalton is starting games in the NFL, Mason Rudolph is going to be signed next year. There's no doubt about that.
100%. I think
there's
we
just
agree.
Not
there.
Many good quarterbacks. People don't want to accept it. He is not a good quarterback, but he is an experienced quarterback, and that is 80% of it for. The Cooper Rushes, for the Teddy Bridgewaters, soon to be Mason Rudolphs, guys that jump from team to team year after year. It's because they need a backup who's done it before. They need to know they are experienced enough that they can prepare themselves to play the game. without needing the coach to hold their hand the whole time.
And
that's
was able
real value.
And was able to win some games without much planning. Mm-hmm. And now he actually makes less mistakes than before. He's kind of timid to be explosive, but he's not going to really kill you, even though your team probably won't score more than 13 so points.
Right. You're going to have to win doing a lot of things. Basically, just take what Cooper Rush just did, probably minus 20% success of team success. The defense that they had made it probably a lot easier for him. He's not going to go out there and light up the scoreboard. If he does things correctly, you're okay.
Yeah, and there are some people out there too. That'll be, I'll leave this for a show that covers the Cowboys, but there are some people that I believe are overrating Cooper Rush a little bit right now. The whole talk of, are you going to, do you keep him in if Dak is healthy? Jerry Jones is not, I mean, I feel like if Jerry Jones ever got word of any of these podcasts, he'd be throwing his phone. You're not going to pay Dak all that money as a former Pro Bowler who just took you to the playoffs and keep him on the bench as healthy for Cooper Rush, who
just say nothing of the fact that Dak Prescott is 20 times more talented than
Cooper Rush. There's a reason why they're in this situation. Yes.
So they built their offense around Dak, not something called Cooper Rush.
Right.
It's great that they won games. All this means is people think that the quarterback does everything, and it's just simply not the case. When you don't have the tangible skills like Rush, there are a lot of things that you need to do to make that work when he's out there. Coaches don't want that anymore. They want the talent that can do the more advanced in-depth things, and that's Prescott.
Yeah, and obviously having an elite quarterback makes it easier, but that is why that it does take a team to win. Yeah. And yeah, quarterback can be overrated at times. We've seen QBs throw a couple picks and be Super Bowl MVP because they're the QB. So that might be why the casual fan overrates them so much. But and we've also seen some QBs have to take teams that maybe were undermanned far at times. Brady has certainly done that with weapons in New England over the years, where he took teams that weren't really good enough and went far. But that's why he's a Hall of Famer. So that's
value of the quarterback position when you have a really good one.
Right, it can make it easier on you, and but it also can be overrated at times. So it's just funny because none of the we talk here and I feel like we could have this same show in 2 weeks.
I'll even say this again. Have me on in March. I'll bet we'll talk about the exact same thing. It's cyclical, you know. It just comes down to simple supply and demand. There are very few really good quarterbacks. There are some decent quarterbacks, and there are a lot of what we would call, relatively speaking, bad quarterbacks. And you need a lot more quarterbacks than there are available with good ones. Cooper Rush is going to have a job next year. You know, as long as they are healthy. For the most part, they're going to remain in the league. Nathan Peterman was on a practice squad. You know, he's the shining example of anything. And unfortunately for poor Nathan Peterman, there aren't a whole lot of quarterbacks that have had less success than he has. But he's done it. He's been around. Right. He's physically able. You need that guy. You know, otherwise, Mason Rudolph wouldn't be on the team. They're paying him $3 million to not play and to not play for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do, again, to support more of my hypothesis out there that the Steelers signed Trubisky as a security, they weren't totally sold on Rudolph, and then they basically fell into the audible that was forced of drafting Pickett when they never believed in their wildest dreams that was going to occur. The entire thing that you alluded to of it almost never occurs to sign a guy to a free agent contract, no matter what the money is, and then have him be your QB3 that you're in the middle of shopping all season but not getting enough value for. That's occurred because my hypothesis is correct. And they basically accidentally found themselves into three QBs that are at least all three backups right now, which is also weird. Generally
when
speaking,
there's three QBs, you have none.
Yeah, they have three guys that are
weak that they have right now.
Have three guys that are at least QB2 or above level, basically. Teams, the QB3.
Some weeks you can get away with it, some weeks you can't, which to me is more of a backup quarterback. But 10,000 foot level, they don't have a dude. Okay. And it's probably not going to happen. We're not going to see that this season. We'll see some stuff from Pickett. I wouldn't be surprised if Trubisky gets back in there. I hope everybody is healthy, but wouldn't surprise me if Trubisky gets another shot. I don't know what they're going to do with Rudolph, but this is exactly the problem. The fact that it's even a debate just creates the exact environment that you want to avoid as a team. Yeah. You need to have one quarterback, and they don't. They don't have one.
Yeah.
Not yet. Week 7.
Yeah, and they're in a better situation than they would have been a couple years ago. The people were debating at that time that they're going to be totally sunk in the water and have nobody at QB besides Mason or Dwayne at the time. They do have at least one guy that is a first-round pick.
One thing you absolutely could not accuse the Steelers of is being myopic about how they're approaching their quarterback search. Restricted free agency. Unrestricted
they're
free
trying.
Agency. The draft. Extension. Yeah. They went after everybody. Any possible way they could have acquired a quarterback, they did. And kudos to them for doing that. And that's probably the best approach. Throw as many darts at the board as you can. Another show, we'll get into why if they have a top five pick, I think they should draft a quarterback.
Yeah,
you don't have one. You need one. It's that simple.
We might leave that to be the hot take of the broadcast here. That exists. But then I'll close with this here. And again, thanks to Neil Coulong here of the NFL Wire with USA Today for joining us here on this episode of Mic Drop on the Believe Network. With the idea that the Steelers, again, Neil's saying if they have a top five pick, the other scenario that probably exists because that's just how our lives work is the Steelers scratch and claw into 7 or 8 wins and move themselves into a 12 or 13 pick situation to where they can't do what Neil's saying. They're still in this same situation and they really can't build that much around because there are a lot of other problems that they have, but they win enough to make it harder to rebuild because they do have the obsession with winning seasons, etc. So again, thanks to Neil Coulong there of the NFL Wire with USA Today for joining us here on this episode of Mic Drop. Again, find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, etc., all over the Believe Network, everywhere you can listen to podcasts. We are, as Neil and I just dropped the mic on the Steelers quarterback controversy and drama and carousel that seemingly never ends and goes around and around we go. All the reports that have led to drama that's been discussed right now, why they're continuously underdogs in game despite now coming off a pretty solid victory, even though wasn't really that impressive if you looked at how the game unfolded and watched that film, and where this team goes from here. And by the way, to throw out the odds yet again that we touched on here on this show, the Super Bowl, the AFC, anything about anyone winning any team MVPs, any individual awards, even the 7-point situation for Miami, by the way, this coming weekend. And I kind of like that. I think Miami's going to win. I think they're going to cover that. Vegas usually is smart. If Tua plays, he's been the best of any of these quarterbacks that we've mentioned so far this season. And I'm not even saying I'm sold on Tua forever. Vegas usually knows. And yeah, how can the Steelers stop Hill, the Neil Coulong brought up? That's a big deal. That by itself, Hill by itself might be part of these 7 points. But don't bet on the Steelers. Don't throw any money on the Steelers. You just don't know. I would not recommend it here. Mike Ossie does not recommend betting on the Steelers off of any of these odds because, again, they are just that you don't know team this season.